Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Okay, well, hello and welcome to Break On Through. I am, what do you get to do on Break On Through? Oh my gosh, I've just been totally thrown off here. You get to travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me as always is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, if you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topic and poetry. Something to suit everybody's taste. And also make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right. What's going?
Oh, let's see. Well, you know, it was a nice day today, a little warm for my taste, but, you know, I'm like, you know, one of those northern wimps that when it gets 82, it's, you know, too warm. And, but I still decided to go for a walk. I decided I was just tired of just sitting around or, you know, just staying indoors. I had some of that cabin fever thing going on. So I went for a walk. Chickens were just all over the place, you know, because we've got grasshoppers just full-fledged crazy jumping all around, And because they're free-range chickens, they just, you know, were having a good old time. They're running back and forth all over, and I don't know, life was good for them. Good for me, good for the chickens. What else? Got a poem wrote. I baked cookies. So I am like Martha Effin Stewart. So, but without the criminal background. So that's always a good thing. But yeah. And how about you, Rex? Tell me a little bit about your day.
Just a normal day. Average. Nick.
Well, there we go. Posted the phone number. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and let people know about tonight's topic. Tonight we're going to start with, I think we have like 4 carryovers from Twisted Tuesday. And then we're going to go into our main topic, which is poetry inspired by the artwork of I say it Yayoi Kusama, and I probably should look that up, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing it wrong, but very, very fascinating artist and person. So I highly recommend, if you get a chance, read about her if you don't know about her, or watch some of the short documentaries on her on YouTube. Very interesting stuff. But, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to delving into and discussing tonight's poetry. And so what do you say, Rex? Shall we get the dots rolling?
Sure. We got Flowers by Weaver of Dreams. That was yours.
All right. Flowers by Weaver of Dreams. Each day when I left the sanctuary of my home, I'd find a single flower lying on my doorstep, always fresh, sweet-smelling, but no note. I tried to catch sight of you, but to no avail. Yet that single flower was always there. Oddly, I didn't ever feel watched or threatened at all. Yesterday, I left a note. Please knock, let's meet. You knocked, we met. You're sweet and very shy. You're my postman, and you grow flowers for me. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
The postman always knocks twice.
Yeah.
Kind of hits on that notion. Why didn't you think about that in the first place? Postman's always there every single day. And even if it wasn't him, probably would have noticed who might it have been to begin with, since it walks in that notion of a smaller town where the postman does walk the beat instead of driving cars like they do these days. So it's got that small town feel to it where the postman does know everything. And in this case, it just happened to be the postman.
Yeah. I like what you had to say about how it has that small town feel to it. In a larger city, and I think even nowadays in small towns, it sometimes makes you a little nervous. When somebody's, obviously interested or something, but, you just don't know exactly what's going on. I really thought this was a nice little romantic love story. And on the way that a single flower can send that message of admiration. I liked how you said the postman never knocks twice. That cracked me up. But You know, I like the straightforward style of this. It's wonderful storytelling, and then I like how she brought in the attention to detail with mentioning that the flower was always fresh and sweet smelling. So wonderful lines and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
What a Flower Represents by Daniel Duhaime. When a flower blooms in springtime, I know that my beloved is thinking of me, because it's the strength of our love that makes it blossom. Every rose petal signifies our enduring love and how it is bound by our souls. The stem of the flower represents purity of our emotion. The flower that gives great pleasure is the enchantment we are cast under. But when the cold wind blows and the flower wilts and dies, it signifies our eternal love, because each spring it will resurrect itself from nothing and bloom.
Wonderful read there, Rex. This is a beautiful write by Daniel Duhaime. And it was like I talked about the other day on a night on the Tuesday show, is how, especially during Victorian times, and even nowadays, flowers have a symbology, a communication. Like you can, with different flowers and different colored flowers, communicate what you want to say with the language of flowers. But I like it how he takes it here on an individual level, like it isn't, it's about what the flower means in a metaphorical way to this person and their love. The idea that every rose petal signifies our endearing love and how it is bounded by our souls. And I really like how he mentions the scent of the flower, because the flower just, it's not just that they look beautiful, it's that they also, many of them smell beautiful, and that scent is important, because it is what attracts the birds, the pollinating insects, you know, the hummingbirds. And I like this all the way through, and the idea of a representation of an eternal love, which makes me see this not only as the idea of a romantic love, but the idea of almost on a spiritual level, that eternal God-like love, that I forget what that's called, what kind of love that's called, but you know what I mean. Just a really great write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It kind of speaks to the what a flower represents. So it's on the color. It's a reference point to the color. Each color represents like white will hit purity. I think red for passion. I think yellow is eternal, and each one has their own distinctive flavor too when it comes to scent. You look at the
there is that, but, yeah, with the colored roses, but there also is a thing where like different flowers mean different things. Is a communication, a symbology within colors. So
right, because he hits on every rose petal, but also the each one has their own scent too. I mean, you hit on the light. The light violet or the light lilac or almost silver in color. They have a note of kind of a licorice blend with the perfume itself. So they've all got their own distinctive aromatics that come with it. So, but that last one kind of bites too at the back end of those. When the cold wind blows and the flower wilts and dies, then you hit on the note to the thorns. Every rose has its thorns. And it's still that renewal that comes up. Instead of the wilting and the dying, it just prompts us that though we're cold tonight, tomorrow comes with it warmth, but still bursts the spring of that which we started with to begin with.
I like that. And yeah, I like how you brought up how the flowers offer up different scents. And the idea of the one that has the kind of licorice notes. That sounds just really nice to me. So wonderful comment there. And what do you got for us next?
Claude Monet by Rosemary 515.
Right. And Claude Monet by Rosewinter 515. It is my turn to read, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Too early to be confused, Pam. Here we go. All right. And I, Claude Monet, I must have flowers always and always. And I agree with this colorful artist who lived her illuminating life with paint on canvas, but also created his marvelous garden, Giverny, with Japanese influences, beautiful green bridge by lily pad pond. Claude Monet painted rainbows with light and shade, beautiful lilies, the delight of Giverny, France. Today's visitors are welcome to come and savor Monet's delightful legacy in floral abundance and poem. And that was just absolutely a beautiful tribute to Claude Monet and his artwork and his gardening. And I'll say more, but first, Rex, your thoughts.
Oh, she did shape it. If you take out the first two lines of Claude Monet, I must have flowers and always, then you've got the shape of the bud itself with the two leaves coming out down near the bottom. And the bottom angle today's visit is that representing the bed itself. But if you leave in the quote, then you've got the full bloom of the rose itself or the flower, the bud in full bloom. But I did like the thought that she took actually the picture itself and worked the thought of that, which it's represented the garden of Giverny, the Japanese influence, beautiful green bridge by the lily pad pond. It does speak to that which Monet loved so much, the colors, the light merry moments.
Absolutely. And you do bring up a good point about Monet, about how much he really loved to work with the light and the colors. In fact, he would actually take and paint the same scene on different times of the day just so that he could play with shadow and light and get like the different perspectives. Like I said, wonderful tribute. I didn't even notice until you said something, so I'm glad you did, that this is a shaped poem, that it's shaped like the flower bud with the leaves sticking out. And I like that. I like that that she put that extra attention to detail. And I really like where she mentions that his garden with its Japanese influences, and then how when she says today's visitors are welcome to come and savor Monet's delightful legacy in floral abundance. And so it's the idea that not only do they get to see his artwork, but that garden in which he planted lives on as a living testimony to his love for flowers, his love for nature. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Crashing by Ken Smith. At my brother's place in Ottawa, in the basement on the two-seat leather couch, I was Houdini. Contorting my body into a fetal position, I took the two leather cushions, laid them on the carpet, and slept like a 67-year-old baby, body extended, the dream expanded to include the giant Alex Colville painting leaned against the basement wall of his wife on the ferry to Prince Edward Island. Peering through binoculars, adjusting the focus, this poem, just a snapshot, click of the shutter, in the basement of my brother, from the unconscious of my mind. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex. You know, I'm a big fan of Ken Smith's writing, and he always kind of takes a different approach. He wrote to the quote. He was in the contest with the quote. Okay. You know, I must have flowers always, always, always. And it's interesting to me that he touches on, well, not touches on, but it's fully, the poem is fully about the, to me, the way the elements, something in our surroundings, which we might not notice as necessarily or think we notice, seeps into our dreams and becomes more poignant than it actually was. Like, instead of just a painting of his sister-in-law riding on the ferry, it suddenly becomes in his dreams, a representation of almost, I would say, maybe self-scrutiny or self-criticism, or how we fear how other people are looking at us, scrutinizing ourselves, our poetry, and what we have to offer up. And I do think that is a pretty cool picture. Like, I don't know the artist, Alex, what did he say it was? Colville. But it looks like he's pretty talented, because that's very realistic looking. I really like how he draws this all together to the end, where this poem, just a snapshot click of the shutter in the basement of my brother being unconscious of my mind. And it's always amazing to me how some poems can come to us in those moments of like that sleep in the dreams, or other times they just, you know, and I think snapshot is a perfect word to describe this poem. And cool. Very well done. I have to say, though, that if I tried sleeping on two leather cushions, I would wake up with a extremely sore back. So, but your thoughts, Rex?
Okay. That is an interesting pick, because it's actually, that's actually the painting itself.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's a great way to look at it, because he does say, Colville never put, well, hardly ever put flowers in his paintings, but this kind of walks that idea of making the travel across the Prince Edward Island, and then viewing from off the ship to see that which you're going to in the first place, which would probably presume to offer some sort of flowers that you're going to look at to begin with, thereby meeting the actual thought that goes with the contest itself. But it does, it forces you to look through the eyes of her and what might be the leading edge. And coming from the thought of just lying on the floor looking at the painting and the imagination of where you might take it, kind of hits on that two notes, because you're trying to imagine what she's seeing in the moment. But also understanding that he was singularly different in how he painted himself. So that thought of the unconscious, from the unconscious of my mind, is just the imagination kicking in as to the wonder in the moment, because it is an unusual portrait in and of itself.
It is, yeah. Yeah. I like how you said that about how it's the representation of enjoying the moment, of being in the moment. Oh, and would you look at this? This Canadian artist, Alex Colville, painted cows. I think I know what one of my next all poetry pictures are going to be.
A Colville cow.
A Colville cow, that's right. All right, and what do you got for us next, Rex?
Rainbows, Hallucinations by Betty Page.
All right. Rainbows, Hallucinations by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Sticky candy smoke, swirling hot pink Cheshire, high vampire's lairs, green caterpillars, psychedelic mushroom sweets, fine mad hatter's teas, queen of hearts, sweet tarts, whipped cream, cherries, strawberries, white chocolate rose, dripping crimson red, pomegranate shattered hearts, tasty fine desserts, rainbow candy dots, LSD kaleidoscopes, melting sugar cubes, white rabbit's pleasures, elegant gold pocket watch, adrenaline dance, hot pink flamingo, pussycat tumbling on grass, darling hussies high, chit-chatting tables above or below the ghosts, sipping orgasms, finest Irish creams, Vox vodka, poured over ice, Kahlua coffees, pleasurable screams, cocktail waitress gets good tips, dancing so neon, vivid, sultry, wild, animalistic passions pinned against all walls. End poem. All right, and Rex, your thoughts?
Well, it'd be easy to go pick on the sort of the LSD notations and the pinning of surrealism, but I think that's deliberate instead of being metaphorical. It just hits on that note of finding that one club, that one touch of where you've got all the colors bouncing off the wall, so that's where you get everything else rolling through this. And it hits on those notes of where intimacy is not frowned upon because you find it everywhere. It's like that, like I said, the vampire's lair. It's that place where nobody goes except those who know of the place. And it's always a good time because it's free for all inside.
I like that thought. I like that. Yeah, very cool. The funny thing is, you know, Betty was featured on Jeremy's Headliners Ball last night or early this morning, depending on how you look at it. And this was one of the poems that she had chosen for her set list. So, I really like her use of the Alice in Wonderland imagery. Very central, very much, she had mentioned that it was a lot to do with the kind of the atmosphere of a rave, I really like the imagery in this and how I the mention of the white rabbit's pleasures, elegant gold pocket watch, adrenaline dance, the very colorful. Very colorful. I like the different drinks she brings in. There's a great sense of passion, and you can see the movement. Like you can see all the high energy, highly sexualized movement that would happen at a nightclub or a rave. So excellent, right, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Pop Dots by Joe Brasdell. Pop from dot to spot on top of locks, clots, conveying nothing from optimal thoughts. Of course, most often our own groups topple or otherwise couldn't mock. Who thought about outer options? Obviously, do not ignore Northern solar shops, ongoing gossip grows, gowns of opulence overall. Those cool hogs own open gobs, oral snobs stored over floorboards. Saw more sun from tourism drops. Out cold, cops won't cope. Hope, oh no, nothing for glowing crocs. Cock-a-doodle-doo, yoo-hoo. Oops, sorry, morning glory, nothing gory. Offensive slobs, doorknobs. Don't rot sock slots. Sore boring background above concrete cloaks. More shoreline, sold money score. Poor old crones got you, so stop and pump.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say this one really impressed me. It was one of the first poems in. I think it was actually the first poem in. And the whole concept, I mean, it's a great write, but as he says in his AN, all of the words in this poem contain the letter O, and none are repeated in honor of Dot. Now, as people who know her, the artist's artwork, or just if you look at the contest and you look at the various quotes and the various artwork, you'll see that she had an obsession with dots and repetitive patterns. And like the quote that Betty had written to, all my art extends from hallucinations known only to me, is actually true, because the artist, she suffers from hallucinations that she had dealt with since she was a child. Many of these hallucinations being like expanding dots, light and color. But so I really like how not only there's a surrealism to this that reflects the artwork well, but the fact that he paid tribute to the dot with the O's without having any one word repeated is really great to me. I was impressed with this, and I was impressed with some of the messages. The idea of ongoing gossip grows, gowns of opulence over all those cool hogs, own open gobs, oral snobs stored over floorboards. There really is this whole idea of the way we treat people, how we look down our noses at people. I also like that he brings up oops, sorry, morning glory, nothing gory, offensive slobs, doorknobs, don't rot sock slots. I like where there's a kind of a bite, a sarcasm to the oops, sorry, morning glory, nothing gory. The idea of not acting deal with your own issues, with your easily offended sensibilities, just a very clever write and very well done. And Rex, what did you get out of this write?
It's definitely not the picture itself, but there's more to it. There's that picture, that singular thought in the middle, that's a flower, complete with the stamen and sepals inside the flower itself. It hits on who thought about outer options, and that's the general idea, the outer options that work within the voice itself, as well as her particular nuanced notice where the dots are a big part of who and what she is. Obviously, do not ignore Norton Solis Shops. Ongoing gossip grows, gowns of opulence overall. It kind of hits at the notion of the smaller, out-of-the-way shops where you might find something interesting to walk into, maybe pick up. And then again, it's like, those cool hogs open gobs, oral snobs, sort of the floorboards, saw more sun before tourism drops. Again, that thought to finding that little out-of-the-way place before it shuts down for the season, but it also hits on that notion of those who think themselves highly superior in thought and mentality, but look at that, but do not understand the significance because their sensibilities walk a different tone, and they don't understand the motif that sits within. And And the thought of nothing but glowing clocks, cock-a-doodle, you, which is only morning glory, nothing glory, offensive slobs, doorknob. It's kind of that notion of, hey, you don't like it, get the hell out. We do have people that come here who do appreciate. So you might want to find yourself muttering elsewhere instead of not offering up anything as far as, hey, you know what? Why don't you buy something? You might be impressed with it later.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And all right, what do we got going on next?
Sun Meets Starfish by Darkened Oil.
All right, Sun Meets Starfish by Darkened Oil. And it goes like this. Upon the reflection in my dreams, the sun started to descend, but beneath the water was a starfish that didn't want the light to end. So as the sun made its way coming down so low, the starfish jumped out and grasped it, not wanting to let go. But it was just my mind dreaming about the sun always going away. The sun's okay, but I prefer once it's gone on its way, because I myself prefer the moon and the polka dots of shining light that fill the sky when darkness comes. The stars, they still shine bright. End poem. And wow, that is just absolutely beautiful. You know, I really like rhyming poems where the rhyme scheme is like the end of the stanzas connect and rhyme with the next one. So I thought that was very cool and beautiful, right? And what did you think, Rex?
To bite the duality, because the starfish in here is the representation of the sun with that sitting in the middle. But it does point with the notation to what's on the starfish leg, those little bits of suckers. The representation of the moon. So it walks in both arenas in the moment. And it's on that right upon reflection in my dreams, the sun started to descend. The idea of the starfish wanting to keep itself shining bright, but you can't have the sun without its setting and the darkness that comes with it and the representation on the backside of that being the moon. So you get a twofold thought of you love the sun, but you prefer the back angle, the note of it, where it's cool, and you've got the deeper reflection that you walk into with the moon itself. So it walks a dual nature because you got it both in that picture, yet you've got the noted point reflecting throughout and offering itself up for what it means at the back end. The polka dots of shining light representing the stars, and that fills the dark sky. When darkness comes, the stars, they will shine bright. There's that notation of even though the sun is reflecting to begin with, there's that note of, oh, I can't wait for what comes next. And that is my time where all else glows. There's a sense of peace and a notation to where the mind gets the thing in the moment.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, you're right. There is a duality to it that works really well with the chosen prompt and the idea of the appreciation of nighttime, where, as you say, there's kind of this moment where the mind gets to really just pause and take it all in. You know, and I liked that prompt. I'm glad somebody, I mean, I liked them all, but I'm glad that Darkened Auras chose to write to that one. You know, the artist having chosen to purposely put this above the water so that the above the water, it represents the sun, and below the water, it represents, you know, a starfish. And Darkened Auras brought that out really nicely in her thoughts. I really liked where the imagery, and I thought this was kind of had a nice surrealism look to it and wonderful storytelling, very, almost fairy tale like. The starfish jumped out and grasped it. So as the sun made its way coming down so low, the starfish jumped out and grasped it, not wanting to let go. There's this whole idea of the starfish to me representing people who aren't happy being themselves, that they're willing to jump on to anyone, and you know, that's it's almost like the idea of a worshipfulness of the sun. And I like how, as you mentioned, he turns around with that the thought of the sun's okay. Like, you know, the sun is good, it has its purpose, but I am more of a night person. You know, night is when the true beauty of the light of the moon and the stars comes shining out. Yeah, so this is beautifully written and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Thoughts, Truth, and the Journey by Gottschalk. Is the wind a friend of the soul whispering my ear as I stroll, or madness, hand in hand with sanity? Which one am I? My pen blossoms, flowers from my pores, my work through life scores history, meaning braided with mystery. I applaud the conjecture of facts. I connect the stars like dots. My sky, my stars, stairs to the top, ascension from hell to heaven and back. I seek permanence, but settle for locum tenens from the fleeting nature of thoughts. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. Because, you know, a lot of the prompts had to do with dots, and even the quotes were mostly about dots and her obsession. And it's not just the obsession, it's that the dot represents the idea of a continuation, you know, and I can't remember which one he wrote to for sure, but I know it was one of the quotes. I like the philosophical approach to this. The idea of that age-old question of who am I? Is the wind a friend of the soul whispering in my ear as I stroll, or madness hand in hand with sanity? Which one am I? You know, am I hearing the voice of a friend long past, or, you know, am I simply gone mad? I like the line, I applaud the conjecture of facts. I connect the stars like dots. My sky, my star stares to the top, ascension from hell to heaven and back. That has a really nice flow to it, and it just really speaks well on the idea of someone who looks for the facts, looks for the plausible, you know, seeks something, as he says, I seek permanence, but settle for locum tenens from the fleeting nature of thought. You know, the idea that sometimes, you know, we search for the bigger picture and forget, at least to me this is what it says, that we forget to look at the smaller pictures throughout, the individuality of the moments. And so excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
The larger question is what's in here? Why are we here? What is there to life? What meaning does it represent? And he hits that with the note in the last three lines. I seek permanence. That is the idea of the knowing, but settle for locum tenens from the fleeting nature of thoughts. The locum tenens being noting the fact that, yes, we are just a placeholder here. So if you take that note in mind, then the fleeting nature of thoughts offers up a kind of a notion of understanding. Hey, we are just a brief note right here, right now, and the true questions will be answered once we become that electrical discharge of our passing, for there is more beyond that which sits, and our questions, they can't be answered here because that's the initial journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I like that. And yeah, you're right. This is that idea of, you know, finding one's purpose. So really cool comment there. All right. What do we got next?
Breathe by EJ Cool.
All right. Breathe by EJ Cool. My love swims in different dimensions, ethereal, mercurial, shifting planes like drifting planes and rolling hills of lilac frills, drenched in honeysuckle dewdrops that slip from the tip of a glossy pink tongue, steadying me with the rhythmic drip and the molasses hum of an interstellar lung existence exhales, charting veins and setting sail through amaranthine seas and pleura veils and poem. That is just absolutely beautiful. And your thoughts, Rex?
It is all about what she's offering up top. Breathe, the thought of breathing in that which is the ethereal, the mercurial, the shifting planes, like drifting planes, those minute traces of that which unlocks the moment from 1 second to the next, the sort of honeysuckle dewdrips that slip from the tip of a glossy pink tongue, steadying me, kind of hits on that notion of standing out in the snow and gathering up snowdrops in the moment, snowflakes in the moment, the rhythmic drip and the molasses hum of an interstellar lung. So it hits on that notion of breathing in the universe to the point where you can taste, feel, see all that is within that singular moment and what is offered beyond that if one opens up the mind.
I like that. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I like the rhyme and flow to this. I thought it kind of, it had in its a way a nice sensuality to it, but not a traditional sensuality. But the idea of a sensuality, getting that sensuality out of life, you know, appreciating the moments in which you can just breathe in and appreciate everything that the life has to offer up, the beauty of it. I like the use of the word pleura. I was reading those are like the representation of the clear sacs that cover the lungs. I really like the imagery of drenched in honeysuckle dewdrops that slip from the tip of a glossy pink tongue, steadying me with the rhythmic drip and the molasses hum. Molasses hum is such a beautiful phrase, giving thoughts to the idea of slowing down, you know, and wonderful write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Pixelation Inundation by Robert J.T. Cloudburst of dots, torrential glow, electric rivers overflow, more pixels spill from arid screens to saturate our eyes and lives with artificial bits of light split into reds and blues and greens, where resolutions barely spare these elements of photographs, developing dead memories as portraits, landscapes, icons, films, persistent visions flickering, intensified by wattage, lens, projected onto surfaces where focused rays reanimate the past we dare to recreate, polished frames of reference points once analog, now virtual. These streaming dreams drench every space. They digitize, sometimes replace. Vague data fades in this veneer. What's rendering? Are we still here? End poem.
Great read there, Rex. This is just a brilliant write on the art of photography. I really like how he brings us into the idea of the pixelization and how the idea that each picture is made up of several smaller parts. I really like more pixels spill from arid screens to saturate our eyes and lives with artificial bits of light split into reds and blues and greens whose resolutions barely spare these elements of photographs. I think it's not only does it talk about photography, but I think there's that idea too of how much time we spend looking at screens of things that really aren't necessarily beautiful or artistic to look at. But then, the art of photography, the idea of that even vision itself is just an amazing thing, the way the light reflects back into our eyes and our brain sends a message. I mean, I read this quote, I think it was by the photographer Anton Ansford, who said, cameras don't take good pictures, photographers take good pictures. And while obviously the camera is the tool they use, it's not going to take the picture on its own, or the good picture. The heart of the photograph are the photographers behind what makes the picture a true work of art. I also like that he mentioned, in polished frames of reference points, once analog, now virtual. So much has become virtual. It's almost too easy nowadays to take and edit a photograph, which in some ways is a blessing, because goodness knows how many horrible photographs I took in the 1980s and 90s. And nowadays, but it's almost too easy to the point where it barely seems, and I could be wrong. I mean, I know there's some wonderful digital photography out there, and I'm preeminent and thankful for it, but there's a certain art form that seems to get lost, amongst the virtual reality of our lives. But I found this a really great write. I like that he ended with the questions. Very thought-provoking and well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
First, Robert, I got to say my apology. I do see the note in your AN. It is ICE, so Robert Tice, my apologies.
Yeah.
Next, as far as this goes, he does walk the angle from both ends. There is a note to be had in the digital value of a picture itself, but the what he is offering at the back end of that is it's become such an easy torrent and inundation that it doesn't reflect the true nature of taking the picture to begin with, because now you can superimpose across fields without actually taking the time, energy, and thought to finding that still shot that you want to begin with, which is the idea of photography. It walks into that plane where you're supposed to understand the meaning and generation of that picture through your eyes and through the lens of the camera itself, because all these pixels and the arid screens, the thoughts of developing dead memories, portraits, landscapes, icons, and films and so on, has gotten to the point where the transference of one to the other is now everybody's building it through their computers instead of actually building upon the landscape that you're looking at or trying to image. So the back end of this, these streaming dreams have drenched every space. They digitize, sometimes replace, oftentimes replace. Vague data fades in this veneer. What's rendering? Are we still here? Is that notation, have we moved so far into this angle of digitization that we are part of the pixelized viewpoint now instead of actually the one noting the pixels that you want to rearrange in a specific idea to image? So the idea here is, are we even real, or are we now become part of the matrix itself instead of notating the matrix?
You know, I really like that. It's a very philosophical and thoughtful comment there in the idea, you know, of have we become a part of the false reality, you know, rather than stepping outside of it. So very cool there, Rex. And what do we got next?
D.O.T. by Dot by Julie Buck.
All right. Dot by Julie Buck. Whether an unconnected dot or a circle with no sphere, I'm a fleck with a fickle frown. I don't fit here. Whether an unfinished thought or a soul drop in a bucket, I'm a tear who has drowned, and well, fuck it, just fuck it. A free-flowing speck, one grain in the sand, more than enough to fill an empty hand. For now I feel like the polka cut the rug to belong. Any other displaced, disturbed dots that wanna dance along? And poem. And Julie wrote to the quote, I am just another dot in the world. And Rhett, your thoughts?
Well, Julie's biting into that age-old notion of trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. It doesn't fit. The free-flowing speck, one grain of sand, more than enough, instead of being part of the illusion as the many. So now I feel like the polka, cut the rug to belong, the easy, instead of being polka dot, the polka dance. And any other displaced, disturbed dots that want to dance along, again, that notation to who else is out there that doesn't fit into the square holes they want to put everybody in, or the square pegs they're trying to fit into round holes, because not everybody fits the same angle.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really like that message in this poem. And as you said, it's that whole idea of knowing you don't fit in to those, you know, square holes, and not being willing to even try, and just finding those people that you fit in with. I thought this had a really fun and clever flow to it. I really did like whether an unfinished thought or a soul drop in a bucket, I'm a tear who has drowned, and well, fuck it. Just fuck it. You know, that was just a great way to utilize the F word. I also, too, really liked the play on words with the polka. For now, I feel like the polka cut the rug to belong. Any other displaced, disturbed dots that want to dance along. It's that whole idea of just reaching out and finding your tribe, finding the weirdos that you fit in with. So just a very clever write and well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Chaos Wears Many Masks by Andre de Corbin. Coal ponders the wisdom of time. Nevertheless, water keeps on flowing, keeps on falling. Unaware sponges will always overwhelm spilled milk, the baby child of untamed rivers and peaceful lakes. Autumn leaves take flight from the gray heads of deep-thinking men, and these leaves are now the raging sea running over empty opera houses where fat ladies were the last ones to sing. All of this drives railway stations to metaphysics as their thoughts race, not like runaway trains, but like poems thrown away, deathly afraid of trash cans opening wide, their mouths of rotten autocrats. And because of all this, screaming bombs drive their irons into the earth, while peace sits on a bench, a shy girl waiting for someone to call her name. End poem.
Great read, Wes. I was really glad to see that Andre DeCorvin was inspired for this contest, because I really appreciate his writing. There's wonderful imagery in this, great metaphors. I like that he opens up with Cole ponders the wisdom of time. And to me, because I think of the idea that along with time and pressure, Cole turns into diamonds, and the idea that Cole is useful because you can do something with, you can create fire, which in turn, cooks food, supplies warmth, provides energy for movement. And diamonds, I suppose there are probably things you can do with diamonds, but a lot of diamonds' values are on the value that we as humans place in them. I really thought this was some fun and clever lines, and the autumn leaves take flight from the gray heads of deep-thinking men, and these leaves are now the raging seas running over empty opera houses where fat ladies were once the last ones to sing. A clever take on the idea of it's not over until the fat lady sings, and since there are no fat ladies singing, it's never truly over. Just strong lines here. I like the idea of the and because of all of this, screaming bombs drive their iron fists deep into the earth. I think to me there's just almost this idea within those last lines of a childhood lived in moments of war, in moments of violence, and being in such a life of chaos that it's difficult to trust. Just a really excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
The opening stanza is the birth of things. Cole ponders the wisdom of time. It hits on that notion of diamonds are wrought for millions of years of heat and pressure to garner that which is so precious. Water doesn't have a thought. It just flows and will always flow, just like the untamed rivers, peaceful lakes, the thought. Sponges will always overwhelm spill milk, the baby child of untamed rivers and peaceful lakes. The idea of some things always walk the standard test of time, while others leak into other things. The thought within the second one, it's the birth of thought idea, the angle of the birth of man, so to speak, the raging sea running over empty opera houses where fat ladies were last ones to sing, offer up that note of impending doom. The runaway train, it's that idea of, because he hits on it, the rotten autocrats, where life is heading if we don't gather a thought to stop what the impending danger that is coming. And because of this, screaming bombs drive their iron fists deep into the earth while peace sits on a bench, a shy girl waiting for someone to call her name. That angle with the last three lines is a notation to the singularity. Everybody talks about peace, wanting peace, yet it is always that shy girl waiting on a bench, the one nobody ever walks up to, says hello, and sits down and talks to. It's an idea, an ideal that is forever quoted, thrown out, yet is never walked into.
I like that. Yeah, that is a really great observation there. The idea of the idealism of peace that no one, that everyone talks about, but do they truly actually want it, or are they just cast it aside like an idea to be admired from afar? So, excellent comment, Rex. All right, what do we got next?
Deprivation by Kay Harless.
Deprivation by Kay Heartless. Bed grows bloodshot eyes, cracked pavements, sclera stems, hardwired, blinkless blooms of flood and fire, surrounded by barbed wire, spiked perimeters on the attack. Insomnia is a Venus flytrap, hungry for images that daylight dreads. Sepal swords drawn from a dotted steeple, each peeper vaulted in its own pulpit from deprivation's no cathedral, and pentennial's prayers will not blind a buried alive mind, which fed by fear's fertilizer serves hard time inside the garden of bloodshot eyes. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Fear, worry, angst, and that which comes with it, which are always sleepless nights. I like to draw on this because of the picture itself, and writing off that picture, the cracked pavement, square stems, hard wire, blink less blooms of blood and fire, surrounded by barbed wire, spike perimeters on the attack. That note too, that if you've been awake so long, all of a sudden you get these little spike barbs that float in the corners of your eyes. And then the offering of insomnia is a Venus flytrap. Ah, it always gets you in the moment. And it is about, because she hits on daylight dreads, something is deeply worrying. And the thought to deprivation's no cathedral, and penitential prayers will not blind a buried alive mind. I like the flow and the thought of the rhyme in that. But the penitential prayers kind of hits on that note of doing penance for something, a sin, a crime, an evil deed. And I also like the fear fertilizer serves hard time inside the garden of bloodshot eyes. A nice touch to someone who is suffering through their own mental incapacity, or something which is deeper rooted, something that is biting at the mind so hard that causes them worry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like how you brought up the penitential prayers part, and the idea of paying penance for a sin. You know, perhaps it's the idea of thinking that you can't sleep because of the weight of guilt. I like how she played with words in this one. You know, insomnia is a Venus fly trap, hungry for images that daylight dreads. I like how it brings in that idea of how, like, when you lay down and you want to go to sleep, but all of a sudden everything that you were too distracted to think about during the daytime suddenly comes rushing into your mind. I also like fed by fear's fertilizer. It was a wonderful alliteration. Plus, it's a really great way to look at the idea of how oftentimes it's our fears, our insecurities that feed those never-ending visions our grief, our doubt, our fears. Grief was the right word, but you know, everything that bombards our mind that we can't let go of is often fed by the fears that we hold on to. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Propofol by John Poole. My doctor gave me propofol as anesthesia. I woke up with temporary amnesia. The doctor says, you will not know anything. You will not care about anything. I laughed and said, I feel like that a lot anyway. This will just like feel like any other day. I quit worrying about the past. The past is gone. It did not last. I stopped planning for the future. Planning interfered with my humor. The present is enough for me. That is why I call it the present. A gift I get for free. End quote.
Great read there, Rex. I enjoyed this one. It was quite clever. Wonderful humor. I like the straightforward style, how he told kind of a little interacting story within a brevity. I woke up with temporary amnesia. The doctor said, you will not know anything. You will not care about anything. I laughed and said, I feel like that a lot anyway. I like, as he said, planning interfered. I stopped planning for the future. Planning interfered with my humor. I like that idea of just, enjoying the moment, like appreciating life for what it is in the moment and having fun rather than incessant worrying. So excellent write and very well done. My only thing is I'd like to know exactly what prompt inspired this. But that's, other than that, I think it's an excellent poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
There is a touch of humor, and he offers up that note, planning interfered with my humor. But there's a deeper angle to this, because humor is one of those vicissitudes of life where there are, I think there's five of them that you must attend to as far as how the body works, or is what they believe is how the body works years and years ago. But anyway, the
right.
deeper angle of this, the thought to temporary amnesia offering up something that he gets on the back end, that present gift I get for free. The deeper angle of this, though, is because propofol as the anesthesia, he's going through an operation. So that means the deeper lying note is the fact that he's given up on planning future is that he needs to live each day as it might be his last, because that operation might have been for something specific, but it might not have gotten the whole thing. So the doctor is told, hey, you've got this much amount of time to live, plan for the future, live every day now in the moment, because that is what you have in the moment. And that is why that last line hits us. That is why I call it the present, a gift I get for free, because he's dropped all the worries, all the pretense, and now it's just the pure enjoyment of every single day for what he gets out of it.
I like that. Great observation there, Rex, and I can definitely see that as you were saying that. It's like, yeah, and a lot of times we use humor to convey a deeper message, but you're right, there is definitely that deeper message within the idea of the having to have the operation, and then leading up, as you said, to the idea that the present is a gift. When you're only given so much time, you appreciate the time you do have. So really great observation there, Rex. Thank you. And what do you got for us next?
Gratitude and praise to our heavenly creator by Rose Winter, 515.
All right. And let's see here. And just so you know, we do have one SoundCloud, Weaver of Dreams. So if we could get to hers before, the show ends at 2 o'clock, that would be great. Gratitude and praise to our heavenly creator by Rose Winter 515. And it goes like this: points of view pointed out, pointillism, polka dot revolution, sensation, points of light, artists, heavenly stars shine eternally. We are timeless souls in space, rock and roll, dancing hip hop, ragtime, waltzing on water, sapphire symphonies, immortal crescendo, tides come in and out. Life is our journey through the universe. Lights come on and fade away, but love endures forever and a day. End poem. Oh, now that is just a really beautiful, very, very clever. I liked the imagery in this. Short, impactful lines. A wonderful spiritual rite that looks at the idea of the music and dance of life and how there's just so many different points of views and so much to be viewed and seen in this world and to be taken in. I really like We Are Timeless Souls in Space, rock and roll, dancing, hip-hop, ragtime, waltzing on water, sapphire symphonies, immortal crescendo. You know, it's like the whole idea of the whole music of the universe working together for that grand crescendo. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
All right, the piece, it's shaped again. It looks like a pepper mill, to tell you the truth, or a telescope.
Oh, yeah, it does, huh?
The idea of being a points of view, point out, pointless, the polka dot revolution, sensation, points of light, artists. It's a matter of how you look at life. Everything else in between is just a notation to that which can be seen, can be walked through, can have a emotional impact in the moment. But it's the last two stanzas that walk away. Tides come in and out. Life is our journey through the universe. Lights come on and fade away. Beloved, do us forever and a day. It's like she goes with the title, gratitude and praise to our heavenly creator. It's a quiet notation to that, which is being thankful for the life and the notation as above, so below. Then we should be thankful for each and every day that we do, because it's a day that one gets to enjoy new wonders if they but open their eyes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, well said there, Rex. And what do we got next?
Blue Polka Dot Down Under by Eric Svensson. Oh, the heart that is full, yet fearlessly make more space, expands beyond its usual norm, breath by breath. A larger form is attained, tiger, tiger, burning bright. Like yellow polka dots, the solar plexus cautioned, yet the heart chose to ignore for its beat to its own drum. Will's expansion beyond its usual norm, tiger, tiger, burning bright. Breath by breath, each love pursued a brilliant polka dot, perusal of passion, fruition always came, like polka dotted yellow spring flower fields, tiger, tiger, burning bright. Oh, my heart recalls yellow polka-dotted suns, smiles of like-minded kith, solar plexus gut caution against kin, skin red polka-dot heart followed its own wiles, tiger, tiger, burning bright. The samurai art of courage, execution by sword, yellow solar plexus gut cautioned, stalwart heart adhered to its own code of honor, furnace heart kiln fired, more red porcelain loves, tiger, tiger, burning bright. Due south of the land of the rising sun, a blue polka dot lives in Perth. Down under dwells a memory, captured on camera while hugging a cheetah. Breath by breath, forgiveness expands. Sanctuary encased cheetah, purred pure cautionary pleasure. Wheels within wheels, polka dotted yellow solar plexus shutters open. like fields of yellow poppies waving in the wind. Thick-skinned heart persistently beats its own drum, strums precious blue polka-dot memories, adamantly present on white porcelain cups, cheetah milder than tiger, tiger burning bright. Heart-based gift of the givers, a silver chain still travels on, momentous memory mountains in the wee hours, dream time linked up thy spore, transplanted blue polka dot down under in Perth. Tiger, tiger, are you still burning bright? End poem.
Great read there, Rex. What a wonderful write by Eric. I'm glad he was inspired. I liked the nod to William Blake. He should write for our contest for next week's show, which has a William Blake poem as a prompt. Now, Eric wrote to the quote, "A polka dot has the form of the sun, which is a symbol of the energy of the whole world and our living life, and also the form of the moon, which is calm, round, soft, colorful, senseless, and unknowing. Polka dots can't stay alone. Like the communicative life of people, two or three polka dots become movement. Polka dots are a way to infinity." And there's a certain, I think, a certain philosophical and, spiritual approach to this poem. I really like how he creates, especially with the repeating line, "Tiger, tiger, burning bright," which obviously, as I mentioned, is from William Blake's poem. He creates a sense of rhythm, a sense of movement. I really like where he says, "Breath by breath, each love pursued, a brilliant polka dot, perusal of passion, fruitation always came, like polka dot, a yellow spring flowered field." I like the idea that he gives to my mind of that pursuing our passion, travel, love, do everything to the fullest. I also really like where he mentions the samurai art of courage, execution by sword, yellow solar plexus, gut caution, stalwart heart, adhere to its own code of honor. I like that he goes into that, the idea of witnessing honor within societies, within people, and as individuals, as a whole. There really is the whole idea to me of the exploration of the world, and seeing the beauty of it, seeing the different, how different people represent different lights in our life, and being guided by those various lights. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
It's very personal. That opening hits on the sort of youthful exuberance, the tiger, tiger, burning bright. The second one, bites, let's see, light yellow polka dots, the solar plexus caution, the idea of knot in the stomach or a little burning sensation, yet the heart chose to ignore, for it beats to its own drum. Will's expansion beyond seasonal norm, tiger, tiger, burning. Again, the youth and the passion within youth. Then he hits on perusal of passion in the next stanza, like a polka dotted yellow spring flower fields. The notion of sunflowers, again, tiger, tiger, burning bright, that exuberance. Then again, the yellow polka dotted suns now, instead of being that sort of that which is churning in the stomach, so to speak, it's resolved. It's smiles of like-minded kith, finding a like-minded soul in the moment. Solar plexus portion against kin. So there's a little bend there to family issues. But thick-skinned red polka dot heart followers don't want, again, the tiger, tiger, burning bright. The Blake thought that poem is moving in its own direction. And what else have we got? Due south of the land of the rising sun. You're talking about Perth, it's Australia. And captured on camera while hugging a cheetah. So there's a memory for notation, so it might also hit on that notation, because he hits on the thought of, are you still burning bright? That thought of a long cherished memory that maybe was met in the moment, but then got separated for whatever reason, because let's hit on Adam Lee present on White Porcelain Cups, Cheetah Marvin and Tiger Tiger was offering up the back end that this friend is the cheetah, something a little milder, not nearly as bright and as intimidating as he's offering up himself. And the silver chain still travels on momentous memory mountains in the wee hours. But there's a notation to the thoughts deep into the night. Dream time linked up diaspora, transplanted blue polka down under incurred sight. So the transplanted, but the cheetah was the one that moved away. And then there's that question at the end, are you still tiger, tiger? Are you still burning bright? Offering up, the cheetah isn't just the cheetah, and Miles, cheetah is the tiger as well. And is that notation to the love still a thought that tingles in the mind, or was it just a passing fancy?
I like that you mentioned that there's a youthful exuberance, almost like the idea of how recklessly and we can easily fall in love when we're in youth and not listen to reason. I also like that you brought up the cheetah, because that was a part that I noticed but then kind of skipped over. But yeah, bringing in the cheetah is a great way to pay tribute to the polka dot. So great comment there, Rex. All right, what do we got next?
Bob by Weaver.
All right, and we do have a SoundCloud for this one. That title reminds me of the joke. What do you call a man with no arms and no legs who's floating in the water? Bob.
Bob.
Yep.
And what do you call a man with no arms and no legs? Oh, it's a battery off his boyfriend.
All right, I'll go ahead and push play now.
A frisson of fear pervades the black night. With darkness comes a feeling of dread. I know if I turn my head quickly, I'll glimpse in the shadows, glaring eyes that are red. My bedroom door creaks open to reveal a huge hairy hand with sharp, dirty claws. I scream, grab my gun from the table, and fire. Oh no, the dead body's my brother-in-law's. When I stayed for a few days with my sister, her husband Bob, who thought I was a fool for believing in spirits and such nonsense, decided he'd scare me for fun. Not cool. Now my poor sister has lost her husband, and the children their father. But what's odd is that no one seems to be grieving their loss. Instead, I see them look at each other and nod.
Great read there, Rex. I know the other thing it reminds me of. It reminds me of that saying, Bob's your uncle. Great read there, Weaver and Wright. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. Just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, your thoughts?
Let's see. Well, there's a twofold notion in this. If it walks into the angle of reality outside of the twilight zone itself, then I say there's a lot more going on behind these closed doors than she actually knows about, and she did them all a favor. And on the other end, it kind of hits on the notion that her being there and he's gone, that it is the idea of he was thrown out, and there was a lot more going on behind those closed doors, and anybody's willing to acknowledge, and that nod is a notation to things are better now that he's gone.
I picked up on that too. Yeah, great observation there, Rex. Yeah, there really is a wonderful dark right, great storytelling. I like the imagery of my bedroom door creaks open to reveal a huge hairy hand with sharp, dirty claws. I scream, grab my gun from the table, and fire. Oh no, the dead body of my brother-in-law's. But then, as you said, you know, like, there's suddenly this, like, at the end, it becomes that awareness that nobody is grieving. You know, that the children aren't grieving, the wife isn't grieving, and, you know, they just look at each other and nod, and it's this idea that, as you said, there's something going on behind closed doors that nobody going missing this man. You know, it either that or, you know, I don't know if some sort of setup, like she was set up, and who knows, you know, but I liked the storyline, the darkness in it. I like how there's this idea of someone, well, and she brings up the fact that he mocks her for believing, like, the character gets mocked by the other character for believing in spirits and such nonsense. And there's this idea of a person who has absolutely no respect, a very egotistical personality. And I definitely think there's a strong hint that he's at the end of a form of abuse going on. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
We are a sea of dots by Cloud Raven.
Ah, must be my turn to read.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You'd think I could keep better track, but it's been a long night. All right. We are a sea of dots, thousand, millions, billions of dots wandering this earth. We grinding on day and day, morning to night, every dot doing what they should be. I was a dot vanishing among all the others, thousands of dots. Then I decided to sparkle, to be a standout, to be a weird dot, to tell the other dots, I am not like you. I don't want to be like you. I want to be my own dot. Funny thing is, I found other sparkling dots. Earth now seems a lot brighter for me and the other dots. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's like Julie's, but on a different vein. Square peg, round holes, and what one finds when one steps out of the thought of conformity. Hey, there's a few other ones out there. So the idea being, why be locked into conformity when you can actually just be yourself?
That is so true, Rex. So very true. I have to completely agree because, you know what, when you conform, You never really truly learn who you are. You just learn what other people want you to be, and you go along for the ride. But I like how she expressed, or they express, how, you know, you can learn to stand up for yourself. You can make that decision to sparkle, to stand out. I love when she says, to be a weird dot, to tell the other dots, I am not like you. I don't want to be like you. And then, of course, you know, and that's the great thing about deciding to be true to yourself, is you find the people you're meant to be with. as I mentioned, Julie's poem too. Yeah, I thought this was just really a wonderful use of language and the idea of expanding one's mind. So excellent write and very well done. All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
We Hold On. Yes. What Holds Us by Thomas D. Where summer is but a breath, a wind and a leaf that falls, catches the dew that threads the grass with a silver cast as the morning light dances through trees to nestle upon the earth. A quick shiver held a moment, a once became more than occasion, as the sun's light twisted through shadows, threaded itself into the landscape, revealing detail so each exquisite piece showed itself in precise clarity. What penetrates vision erupts in conscientiousness, swells through being both of itself and the experience within the beholder. Life penetrates all. Man's conversation rarely overcome. Transformation totals transcendence. The miracle of healing is released when reality is allowed to speak outside of the habitat of foregone conclusions. End quote.
Great read there, Rex. Wonderful write by Thomas B., as always. He wrote to the prompt, the quote, forget yourself, become one with eternity, become part of your environment. I like how he takes us in to the end of summer and the beginning of fall and the sense of change and the beauty that surrounds us. I really like a quick shiver held the moment, a once became more than occasion as the sun's light twisted through the shadows, threaded itself into the landscape, revealing detail. So each exquisite piece showed itself in precise clarity. I like how it's that idea of visioning, and we were talking about this with Monet's artwork, visioning the landscape at different times of the day. To where the, and then that time where the shadow and light just interweave with each other, and there's almost this miracle created, this sense of awe at how truly beautiful nature can be. I really like also within both of itself and the experience within the beholder, life penetrates all. It's in those simple moments of nature and beauty and light and dark interweaving that we really come to know the beauty of life. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
That one line on the last stanza kind of hits on the right note. Transformations totals transcendence. Because if you take the time to go out into where there's nothing else except that which you see, nature itself, you hit on that note, the summer breath, a wind, leaf that falls, the captured dew that threads the grass, the silver cast of morning light dash to trees, and that's upon the air. There's that moment of sunrise, that quick shiver hell moment, the reality of understanding. Because you let everything else go in the moment to the point where you can actually breathe and let all other detriments to that which would heal you in the moment wash off. And at that point, what penetrates vision erupts in conscientiousness, swells through being both of itself and the experience within the beholder. It hits on that idea of seeing clearly in the moment and understanding all the talk in the world won't lead you to the same conclusion of that bright dawning moment.
I like that. So excellent comment there. And you're right that those dawning moments do lead you to some wonderful conclusions. So, all right. Well, I'm not going to try to push another light through. We will go ahead and have carryovers on next week's show. Join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. Saturday, 12:30 a.m. is Aphasiana and Babbler, part sinner, part saint. I don't know their topic, but of course, make sure to check out all the topics for Gen Contest put out by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses. The Saturday's 10 p.m. show is Exploring Your Phrases with Captain B2 and Daniel Vecino, and she's running a contest, The Haunting Hyperrealism of István Sándorfi. And then, of course, Rex, what do we got going on for Sunday?
Sunday we have Muddy Water.
Nice.
Bring your favorite thing, drop something for it, and we move in from there.
Great, great. I'm looking forward to that show. It should be an awesome one. And then for After Midnight, I'm running a contest with Stone Lines from Stone Temple Pilots. And great show tonight, Rex. Thank you, as always, for being here. I appreciate you. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night.